What is up, beautiful people? Yes, it is Thursday. Happy Thursday, ladies and gents. Are you snuggled up right now? Because I tell you what, it's cold outside. Yeah, the snow is coming down. It's about 30 degrees outside. Man, oh man. Yeah, you can feel the holiday. I guess it gets you in the holiday mood, right? You know, cold outside, snow is coming, Christmas around the corner, Thanksgiving. Gotta love that. Look on the bright side of things, all right, folks? But we have a great show in store for you today. In just a second, we'll be continuing our heated debate from yesterday's barbershop topic concerning the student-athlete. What's the validity of the student-athlete in today's sporting world? We'll debate about that, continue that debate, and wrap it up. We'll also talk about the Tigers signing V-Mart to a redonkulous amount of money. And also some other moves as they have cooking as of right now. We'll also talk about the Pistons, the MSU men's basketball team, and yes, give you a sneak peek preview of tonight's current sports TV interview with Nick Archer, the head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team. It's going to be a fantastic sit down. You don't want to miss that, folks. And also, it's Thursday. That means Throwback Thursday, all of that and so much more. But as custom here on the show, let's start you off with your current sports quick hit headliners brought to you by Eric Steen.
Hi, this is Eric Steem, and here are your current sports quick hit headliners for November 13th, 2014. Michigan State basketball added two major pieces to its recruiting class yesterday, as members of the class of 2019, Matt McQuaid and Kyle Ahrens, both signed their letters of intent. Five-star recruit Deontay Davis has already given his verbal commitment, but is expected to sign his letter at some point today. With these signings, the Spartans have the 11th-ranked recruiting class and still have one scholarship available. The Pistons lost a close one last night to the Washington Wizards by a final score of 107-103. Brandon Jennings scored 32 points, with 16 of those coming in the first quarter, but the Pistons were unable to slow down Wizards point guard John Wall, who led the Wizards with 27 points. This is the Pistons' third straight loss and fourth straight on the road. They play again tomorrow night at Oklahoma City. Tip is scheduled for 8 p.m. The Detroit Tigers and designated hitter Victor Martinez have agreed on a four-year, $68 million deal, according to ESPN. The 36-year-old hit .335 with 32 homers, 103 RBIs, and an American League-leading .409 on-base percentage last season. The Tigers also traded one of their top prospects Wednesday night in order to get some help in center field. Devin Travis, the Tigers' most promising minor league second baseman, was dealt to the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for 24-year-old center fielder Anthony Goes. Addressing the center field position was one of the Tigers' top priorities, as listed by GM Dave Dombrowski in his end-of-season press conference. Goes is a light-hitting lefty with good speed. He stole 15 bases in two of his three part-time seasons and has an above-average glove with a good arm to go with it, Dombrowski said in a release. The Houston Texans signed former Michigan State middle linebacker Max Bulla to their 53-man roster off their practice squad, according to ProFootballScout.com. Bulla, who signed with Houston as an undrafted free agent in May, earned a spot on the practice squad with his performance in camp and play in the preseason. He made 14 tackles and an interception in four exhibition games. He is expected to contribute immediately on special teams and will begin as a backup at inside linebacker. Los Angeles Clippers forward Blake Griffin has been charged with one count of misdemeanor battery for an incident in a Las Vegas nightclub last month. According to the filing on Wednesday, Griffin, quote, willfully and unlawfully used force or violence, end quote, on a man, squeezing his hand and shoulder and or slapping him on the face. According to reports at the time of the incident, Griffin was upset by camera flashes in his face and grabbed Schumann's phone. According to police, the maximum penalty if convicted is 6 months in jail and or a $1,000 fine. Court records obtained Wednesday show Griffin is due for arraignment on December 8th. The results are in, and as expected, Clayton Kershaw is once again the National League Cy Young winner. Kershaw's dominant regular season helped him win the award unanimously. He posted a 1.77 ERA to go along with a 21-3 record and 239 strikeouts. Kershaw has now won back-to-back Cy Youngs and three of the past four in the National League. On the American League side, the award was much more up in the air. The Cleveland Indians' Corey Kluber took home the award, narrowly beating Felix Hernandez in the vote. Kluber led the Indians' pitching staff and finished with an 18-9 record while recording 269 strikeouts to go with a 2.44 ERA and taking home his first Cy Young Award. Officials in the Dominican Republic confirmed Cardinals outfielder Oscar Tavares was legally intoxicated at the time of his fatal car accident last month, reports the Associated Press. Tavares and his girlfriend were killed in a single car crash on October 26 when the car went off the road. Tavares' blood alcohol level was 5 times the legal limit at the time of the crash. At only 22 years old, Tavares was considered one of the best prospects in baseball coming into the 2014 season. Tavares hit a game-tying home run in Game 3 of the NLCS 2 weeks before the accident occurred. The trial involving Jameis Winston's rape accusation has been delayed 2 weeks. The Heisman Trophy winner will then find out whether or not he violated Florida State University rules, which could lead to his expulsion from the school. The hearing had originally been scheduled for next week, but an attorney advising Winston asked for a delay in the proceedings, and it was granted by the retired Florida Supreme Court judge who was brought in to hear the case. The decision to push back the hearing means that it won't occur until after the Seminoles conclude the regular season on November 29th, and it's possible that he won't render a decision until after the national championship game on January 12th. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Back to Al for the show.
Thanks a lot, my man. Appreciate that. Again, as you just heard, it's time to start the show, and our phone lines will be open all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on anything we talk about and discuss today, anything on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot us a comment there. If you do, I will read it live here on the air. Please, no profanity. Also, tweet us at AlMartinWKR. I'll read your tweet. Or tweet us at our official current sports Twitter page of WKR_sports. Okay, a packed show for you all today, folks. As we do each and every Thursday, we give you a preview of the night's current sports TV interview, the premier guest that I have for that night. Now, I want to give a special shout-out to the East Lansing High School boys soccer team. The entire team came out yesterday, last night actually, to our WKAR-TV studios to get hype for their coach, to get hype for their team, because they have reason to, folks. They are the back-to-back Division II state champions. You gotta love that. I mean, this team is so good, rolling on all cylinders. Actually, one of those members of that team happens to be DeJuan Jones. DeJuan Jones is Mr. Soccer for the state of Michigan, proclaiming him as the top boys soccer player in high school in this very state of Michigan. DeJuan was in the house, got a chance to see his father as well. It was a jam-packed house, folks. It's a stacked audience. The audience was fantastic. And my premier guest, of course, was the head coach of that very team, Nick Archer. Yes, Nick Archer, he is a legend. When you talk about Michigan coaching, folks, he's a member of the High School Coaches Association Michigan Hall of Fame. He also even has a stadium named after him. You guys know the East Lansing Soccer Complex over there, where Archer Stadium is also over there, named after Nick Archer. So Nick joined me to talk about the team, to talk about their run to back-to-back state championships, to talk about his tenure with the East Lansing boys soccer team, which, get this, dates all the way back to 1973. How about that? That's impressive stuff, man. He's also a guy who was an MSU alum, played on the 1967 and 68 MSU men's national championship teams for the men's soccer team here at Michigan State. Nick was certainly a standout, played alongside legendary assistant coach Joe Baum. I mean, I could go on and on. He's a St. Louis native. You'll get to see a sneak peek preview of that sit-down that I had with Nick in just a second, so you don't want to miss that, folks. And if you want to tune into Current Sports TV, you can do that tonight and see not only, you know, my sit-down with Nick and, you know, get to see the crowd and just the hoopla that was last night. Fantastic episode. But you also get to see our post-game coverage from the MSU and OSU game as Michigan State tries to brush that off now and will play Maryland on Saturday. You'll also get to hear from the MSU men's basketball team as they prep for their opening season, start to the regular season, I should say, against Navy, which will be taking place Friday night at 9 p.m. You'll get to see some highlights from the MSU women's basketball team's exhibition and so much more. Again, that's Current Sports TV tonight at 10 p.m. with guest Nick Archer, head coach of the East Lansing Boys Soccer Squad. Tonight at 10 p.m., WKRTV, folks. Fantastic show in store for you guys, and I want to start it by piggybacking on a conversation that we started during yesterday's show. Of course, each and every Wednesday is Barbershop Wednesday. We like to hit on a topic that that kind of pushes the envelope, that embraces debate, and provides some healthy conversation into going beyond just your average who won, why they won, will they continue to win or lose conversation. And this conversation was certainly sparked by some interesting comments made by the new U of M president, Mark Schissel. Now, if you didn't hear, Mark actually retracted a bit of his statement that he made earlier this week concerning academics at the University of Michigan. Now, if you remember, on Monday, Mark criticized the academic performance of his athletes. Now, on Tuesday, Schissel did a two-step backpedal and apologized to football coach Brady Hoke and interim AD Jim Hackett. And on Wednesday, Hoke said, quote, "We try and recruit the best football players, the best student athletes, and people that fit the blueprint here at Michigan." Now, you know, for me, when looking at this conversation, one of the points that we made yesterday, that I happened to make yesterday, was that, you know, how you define a student athlete, that's the question at the end of the day. And how much does the student part really come into play when a top-tier athletic program like a U of M, heck, like a Michigan State, like a Duke, like I could go on and on and on, like for any athletic program for that matter, how much does that student portion really come into effect? Let's just say, for instance, you got this highly touted recruit, right? I mean, you know, he could be ranked, you know, a top five football player in the state of Michigan or in the nation for that matter. Does talent trump what that kid has done in his high school career academically? That's the question that has to be begged here, because that is at the root of this discussion here. And I understand where Mark was going with this. Now, the fact that Mark, see, this is the thing that Mark messed up here with. He retracted his statement and sort of pushed the envelope and really didn't realize how his comments would be taken when talking about and concerning a program like the Michigan football team, a program that is a story program, is the winningest football program in all of the nation. And when you make comments that rock the boat, so to speak, as to what these kids are doing, not on the field, then you open a big can of worms and get criticized automatically. Now, as far as Brady Hoke's team goes, hey, Brady Hoke has a pretty good record when it comes to the athletes that have come through his program and have decided to stay 4 years and walked across that stage and got a degree. He has a pretty good track record in that regard, definitely, without a doubt. But Mark, you know, when talking about this, he believes as though, in looking at his initial statements before he retracted, you know, it seems as though Mark believes that the talent that they admit on athletic prowess at the University of Michigan can oversee what they are doing in the classroom. And, you know, that's really what comes to the root of this conversation. Mark went on to say, quote, "We admit students who aren't as qualified, and it's probably the kids that we admit that can't honestly, even with lots of help, do the amount of work and the quality of work it takes to make progression from year to year." Now, that's a direct quote from Mark. He said that on Monday at the State Advisory Committee on University Affairs. This is coming from straight from the Michigan Daily. Now, it is certainly clear that he is concerned about the situation, and it sort of feels as though that, you know, the student athlete, that student portion is sort of going out the window. Alex, you weren't with us for this debate yesterday on the tail end of the show. I did not get to get your thoughts on it. But first off, addressing Mark's comments here, what were your initial thoughts upon hearing them?
My initial thought is that this just adds more fuel to the fire. When you look at what happened with North Carolina and their academic scandal, you remember when Derrick Rose declared and with the whole ACT thing. In the recent decade, you've seen more and more academic controversy with student athletes more than ever before. And I think for the Michigan program, in this state of peril and dismay, this is not what they needed. This is the last thing that you would have wanted to hear, regardless if it's true or not, Al. Regardless if it's true, definitely not needed. So my initial thoughts on this are totally unneeded. This adds more fuel to the fire. I think you're going to see a lot more cases and investigations breaking out regarding universities. And look at a school like Northwestern. I mean, that's a school that is great academically. A lot of the players they recruit have to be Northwestern kind of guys. There are other schools that can get around that. Is Michigan going and doing this? Are they admitting players that don't meet up to academic standards like Mark and Klein? I don't know. We both don't know, Al. But at the end of the day, this is a very touchy issue that I think is going to raise a lot of question and concern.
Well, to be 100% real with you, Alex, at the end of the day, now again, this is from a guy who's looking on the outside in. At the end of the day, talent and moolah trump what an athlete does in the classroom. I got to be real with you on that. I think at the end of the day, what coaches are hired to do in college athletics is to what? Get the W. Win.
That's right.
That's what their job is. That's what they're hired to do. Now, of course, I feel as though there are many compassionate coaches out there who care about the overall well-being of their athletes. Coaches like Tom Izzo, who have gone on the record countless times to make sure that his students, I mean, you saw a perfect example in Kenny Kaminsky. Obviously, he was a kid who was not getting it done outside of what he was doing on the hardwood. It was rumored that he wasn't going to class, and he just wasn't living up to expectations, the expectations that Izzo placed on him academically. So you know what happened? He didn't play. He bumped heads with Tom, and he is no longer wearing a Spartan jersey here. There are coaches, yes, that look out for the well-being of their athletes overall. But there are a huge amount out there, I'm sure, that ideally could care less. They just care about what are you doing on the field? What are you doing on the hardwood to make our team successful? The big thing, you know, one of the biggest examples right now out there that's pretty current that this school is under investigation for is the University of North Carolina. For those who don't know, there's a report that was released about the Tar Heels and specifically Roy Williams' basketball team, men's basketball team. Now, there were classes actually set up within the supposedly, let me put supposedly out there. We got to be politically correct as journalists here. Supposedly set up within the African American Studies program in that university that catered to the student athletes. Roy supposedly in this program supposedly set up these classes for student athletes to take just to get by. Really didn't have to show up. It was just kind of a blow off class to pad that GPA. Now, again, that university is under investigation. And to go off about your point, Alex, about definitely this is not an ideal time for this discussion to come up when you talk about all of the things that this University of Michigan football team has undergone and to see the trickle-down effect that has had, you know, ending now with, not ending because now you got to hire somebody in replace of him, but really sparking the plug with Dave Brandon, being fired. But when looking at the situation now, you know, it sort of begs the question out there, okay, if UNC is supposedly maybe doing this, how many other schools may be doing this? It's a legitimate question because I guarantee if there's one school under investigation, that's just a pick of the possible litter. We have a caller on line one. Mike from Saginaw wants to chime in. Mike, how you doing? You are on Current Sports.
Yes, I am. Thank you, L. Martin. What I want to talk about is the academics. You know, the deal about it is now they're recruiting these kids, they fast-tracking these students for colleges and stuff. You notice that even in Detroit, they got academies and prep schools so the kids can be able to do college work. Is it because these kids today that the football program are recruiting, they're not ready for college? What do you think? What's your opinion on that?
No, thanks for the call, Mike. And honestly, I think when looking at it, you know, there are a few alarming things that we still haven't hit on in this conversation. You know, I actually sat down the other day, and my goodness, was this one of the best articles I've read in a while. Sports Illustrated, which does an incredible job in the world of sports journalism, they had an article on homeless athletes. I don't know if you saw this, guys. Did you see that, Mike?
Yes, I have.
Did you read that article?
Yes, I did. I completely read the article, and I mean, it goes to your environment, too, because a lot of these kids, a lot of these kids don't have a support system at all.
Right.
They have to do things by themselves. So otherwise, we making them grow up faster instead of them. We stealing their childhood from them. And
right.
Then eventually, if they do make it to the NFL or something, then they're going to act on out and everything. You see in all this news about these football players, they acted out and everything. Excellent example, too, Al.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch the 30 by 30 by Rand University with Randy Moss and how he grew up?
No, I haven't seen that one, no. Is that a new one?
Because, you know, that's a small town. We from big cities, like from Detroit, and I'm from Saginaw. We know a lot of people who played basketball and football. But look at them. They don't have a skill that they could use to get into the job market, or they just got addiction problems like alcohol and drugs. So I think, you know, if you don't have that academic background, like most of your college students on those campuses and universities, they have counselors that'll work with them, or they have their parents emphasizing the education and mostly the respect institutions. A lot of them just, you know, they up against it. They really are.
Yeah. No, I agree. And a very good point, Mike. Appreciate that. And yeah, I think you hit on a few things there. This conversation opens the door for other bigger conversations that are socially, you know, perceived as just setting up our kids today for failure automatically. I can talk about where I'm from. You know, there are a lot of kids out there who are, you know, growing up in single parent households. The mom is working 2 to 3 jobs.
Sure.
Who knows where the dad is? So they're set up in an environment where they're basically out there on their own and have no guidance. They don't have that role model to look to and to teach them the certain things and the steps that you take to be successful in life. So these kids are ideally lost. It's very rare when you get that swan song story of a kid who comes up in a situation like that and deals with all of that adversity and ends up, you know, whether it doesn't have to be athletics, just being making something out of his or her life. It's certainly a bigger conversation in that regard. And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What I like to comment on too is the You know, we just concluded with the political campaigns with all the people running for office. I don't think the media or the politicians have no clue on how these people are growing up or even how they live in their situations they are. Because if you're working 2 or 3 jobs, you ain't got time to be around your children and watching what they're doing. Basically, what you're doing is being a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So when they act bad, you talk to them. The churches, they should be a support system, but they not because they so busy trying to survive also.
Right, right.
So your institutions are failing these kids, and then what the kids going to do? You know, you got kids all they doing is just getting up in the morning and they loitering. They hanging out at school. If they not hanging out at school, they hanging out somewhere else. They running from house to house playing games, playing electronic games. And they got bored. Oh, I'm low on money. So let me go ahead and see if I can go get some money. And that's when all the trouble starts, because in school, your status is how much you can keep up with your kids wearing clothing and be able to go places and stuff. You know, it's still that peer pressure is still there regard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the deal about it is we lucky in this country that there's so many colleges and universities that we can get the talented, that the people we have is talented enough to help these sports make all this money, generate all this interest, because we just basically, it's called playing obsolescence. I don't know if you heard of that word or not, but basically we just throwing away a generation or throwing away 2 generations, matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, academically, if you teaching them just the basic skill work, like working in a tool and dye plant, or you counseling to work around drug offenders, or I'm just throwing hypotheticals out there, Al.
Right,
just,
right. I hear you.
The tragedy of it is if you go to a big university and you don't get educated, that's a tragedy in itself.
Exactly. No, I hear where you're coming from. Mike, good points, my man. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you, Al. Thank you for letting me speak. And you have a good day.
Hey, you too. You too, my man. Yeah, and I think when looking at this conversation, too, student-athletes, there are many student-athletes who come to a university like a Michigan State or just any Division I university. Hey, ideally, when you step on this campus as a student-athlete, you have an opportunity to, like, golden opportunity to really go far athletically. If you put in the time and effort, there are other variables that weigh into this. But ideally, if you're on the MSU football team or the MSU men's basketball team and you look at the situation you're in, playing for a program like that, yeah, the spotlight is on you. You could possibly make something out of your life and become a top-tier athlete and possibly go to the NFL or NBA draft and get drafted. That's the dream. But I feel as though so many student-athletes come here with that dream and don't think about the plan B. It's very rare. If you look at the numbers, if you look at the statistics and run them down, only the cream of the crop, the best of the best, make it to attain that dream in pro sports. It is very, very tough. And I don't think a lot of kids recognize the situation that they are academically when they come to a university like this. Academically being the key word, that they have an opportunity to get their degree and have that plan B. Because looking at the numbers, hey, not everybody can be the next Andrew Wiggins, folks. Okay? That's just plain and simple how it is. Very alarming thing. You know, Mike brought up the conditions that some of these kids come to universities with. I had a casual conversation I've had my doctor's appointment this morning. I had a casual conversation with some of the people there who were tuned into the show yesterday and talking about the situation that student athletes are in. And he brought one of the staff members there brought up a situation where her friend works for Delta Airlines and ran into this one athlete who travels a lot. And the athlete brought up the fact that he can't read. This is a 42-year-old man that can't read, folks. That's an athlete, top-tier athlete. She wouldn't give me the name, and I understand that. Now, you know, it was a really interesting investigation brought up by CNN that found public universities across the countries where many students in the basketball and football programs could read only up to an eighth grade level. Now, the data obtained through open records requests, through FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests, showed a staggering achievement gap between college athletes and their peers at the same institution. Interesting stuff. Just to give you guys an example here, looking at this investigation now, this is public access. You can Google it. You know, just Google CNN, college scores, U.S. college scores. And they reached out to all these universities, including Michigan and Michigan State. Michigan State and Michigan denied to partake in that statistical breakdown. But one of the universities who did was Louisiana State University, LSU. Now, they only provided averages of ACT scores for football players during their years noted, and the university said it does not keep a list of individual ACT scores in the format of a record. But they did find a few things here. Now, according to several academic experts, the threshold for being college literate is a score of 16 on the ACT. 16, folks. That is the standard, the standard here in America for being college literate. Now, according to LSU, the average ACT English score for football players admitted was 2007, 18.6, 2008, 17.0, so barely over in 2008, 2009, 18.2, 2010, 18.3, 2011, 20.1, and 2012, it went down to 18.4. So many of these athletes are coming in barely able to read, barely able to read. Chew on that for a second, folks. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, you get a chance to hear from our current sports TV sit down with the head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team, Nick Archer. You don't want to miss that, folks. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy Thursday, ladies and gents. Just muscle through it. The weekend's almost here, okay? Tomorrow will be TGIF, and then you'll get to max tax and relax all weekend, all right? We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527. We'll chat about anything that's on your sports knock, and we actually have Ray. My man Ray is on line two. Ray, how you doing?
How you doing today, buddy?
I can't complain, my man. How about you?
Well, I'm pretty happy. I thought Hernandez was going to win the Cy Young last night. I'm a big Indians fan. Corey Kluber won it, and I went down there and watched him. He was up on the Orioles, 1-0, two outs, and they took him out after he gave up a base hit, and they blew the game. He didn't win that. Mm-hmm. He could have won 25 games. He had the worst defense in all baseball. And he, if they would have had any kind of hitting, he would have won 25 games this year. I was really happy that Kluber come out of nowhere to help the Indians. They finally made a good trade to the San Diego Padres and got him about 4 years ago, and he come up big for him this year.
Yeah, how great was Corey? I mean, he captured – now, looking at the votes here, Ray, he captured 17 first-place votes. Felix Hernandez of the Mariners, he earned the other 13 first-place votes.
It was real close.
It was very, very, very close
run. If you take one of those votes away, 1.5 votes is about all you won by.
Yeah, exactly.
7 points for one first-place vote.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I think that Kluber, he basically kind of – he blossomed at the right time. You know what I mean?
5-0 got down the stretch.
Exactly. He was dominant down the stretch. You know, again, the Indians, they fell just short of a postseason berth. But looking at it, you know, he posted a 1.73 ERA after the All-Star break. Won his last, five starts, I believe. Recorded 50.
He didn't make the All-Star game. They turned him down at the All-Star game. I didn't think he had a chance to win this award, you know, considering they didn't turn him down to All-Star. He was 9-6, but he couldn't help himself. A lot of those games, their defense was just terrible for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I tell you what, you know, it's great that again Kluber, he kind of blossomed at the right time and he turned a lot of heads. And again, during those last five starts, he actually, you know, 54 strikeouts and a 1.12 ERA. I mean, hey, that's pretty impressive though. But I hear what you're saying.
Hernandez too, he gave up 8 runs to Toronto.
The last
start.
Exactly. Yeah,
I think that's what turned the tide for Kluber to be able to beat him out, because I didn't realize it, but Hernandez won a couple years before that with only 13 victories, and Kluber had 18, and Hernandez had 15, and he still almost beat Kluber out.
Yeah, definitely. That's certainly impressive. Those two, they definitely had some solid years this year, Ray.
Hey, what was the president talking about there? Was he knocking Brady Hoke or what?
Basically, U of M president Mark Schissel, you know, he just criticized the academic performance of athletes, and you know, he kind of took a shot at, you know, to read the quote again. He said, quote, "We admit students," and this is on Monday at the State Senate Advisory Committee. He said, quote, "We admit students who aren't as qualified, and it's probably the kids that we admit that can honestly, even with lots of help, do the amount of work and the quality of work it takes to make progression from year to year." He's talking about the student athletes at U of M. And then after a while, he retracted the statement and apologized to Brady Hoke and U of M, the current U of M AD, Jim Hackett, for his comments. And, you know, he just kind of went on this whole spiral after that.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that Northwestern Michigan game. That guy rolling out on that 2-point play, and the announcers announced it too. That was a very, I mean, they both those teams set college football back 100 years the way they played. I mean, there's some terrible offenses in the Big Ten this year, and I don't understand why they would call a play like that when they could have just went straight back on a pass and kept both sides of the field. Michigan had all their players on that one side of the field.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you have to admire. I did admire Northwestern going for two in that moment, considering how they played against U of M in overtime series as of recently. But that was one of those plays where U of M, they did a great job. I forget the player who stunted it, but, you know, he stuck
Clark.
Right. Yeah, Clark. Well, he stuck right to the left side and ended up, you know, the quarterback ends up slipping on the play. And the grass really beat Northwestern on that play there. But it was a great scheme by U of M, and they come away with the win. It's one of those things you can't really plan for in that instance, right? But I do agree. I mean, looking at the offenses in this Big Ten, other than, you know, Michigan State, Ohio State, and maybe the exception of Nebraska, man, or Minnesota. It's really tough. It's really tough to watch. I agree.
You think Maryland? You think Michigan State's gonna be able to recover?
I think so. I think Michigan State, looking at the Antonio era and how they've come off, quote unquote, big losses, they're gonna play with a chip on their shoulder with something to prove, especially that defense who did take a shot in the mouth during that Ohio State game. I think Michigan State does come out and has a solid outing on Saturday. Specifically, that defense does. Look out for them, Ray.
Hey, I heard you talking about that Hatch kid up here in Fort Wayne, the one that almost died.
How about that, Austin Hatch?
Yeah, that was a great story that you talked about Beeline, because you know there was a couple things I don't like. Beeline lying to me a couple times, but going back to that Hatch kid, I think he had a little bit wrong. His dad and mother were his first wife got in a car accident, and she got killed, and then he got remarried, and then he died. You know, his dad and the second one. But it's a fabulous story about how that, you know, Michigan's really helped that kid. I give Michigan credit on that part.
Yeah, you got to admire what John Beilein and that program did on that night. It's certainly one of those feel good type of stories that you just like to see in sports. It was hats off to U of M for that one moment. Hey Ray, thanks a lot for the call, my man.
Family, and you pray for me. God bless you guys.
Hey, you too, my man. Yeah, definitely. Again, that was one of those moments that you know, you just look at and say, "Hey, you know, they did it the right way in that moment." Austin Hatch, and he, you know, it's funny looking at his post game presser when he was talking to the media about that moment. He said, "Hey, I'm not done yet. You know, that's only just the beginning. You know, he's got bigger goals and he wants to be out on that court and playing on a regular basis." So you know, yeah, definitely a feel good moment. Hey, if you want to call in just like Ray just did and talk about anything, and I mean anything, that's on your sports noggin, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. While you guys are blowing up our phone lines, let's play a sneak peek of my sit-down with head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team, Nick Archer, on Current Sports TV tonight. Nick, again, he's been a longtime coach of the Trojans, dating all the way back to 1973, has five state championships with the Trojans. This is the first time he's ever won back-to-back, the first time this program has done that in its history. A truly remarkable moment. We had the entire team in the house last night, and you'll get to see it again tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. But here's a sneak peek of that interview. And I first had to ask Nick, you know, being from St. Louis, how he, you know, took to the game of soccer.
Well, in St. Louis, you grew up with it. So I was playing at a very, very early age. So we've been playing soccer a long time.
So it was pretty ingrained in St. Louis? I didn't know that.
It was.
Gotcha. So when did you start playing?
Second, third grade, I guess.
You just kind of took to it from
just
there, huh?
Went on to it, yeah.
Now, again, you know, winning championships, national titles in 66 and, well, 67, excuse me, in 68. I mean, what do you take from your playing career that you now implement into your coaching career, coaching individuals like the East Lansing soccer team?
Good question. Just the love of the game. Just simply go out and enjoy the experience of knocking a ball around, competing against other teams and individuals. It's just a fun thing to do. Good way to exercise.
Now, also, you played alongside, of course, the great Joe Baum. You guys actually go way back, you know, to St. Louis, where you guys played in rival high schools. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, Joe and I were rival high schools. He was across the city, and I was on the other side. And north side would play the west side, and it was always a good game.
Definitely. And Joe is an assistant coach. Well, that is, was an assistant coach for the MSU men's soccer team for many, many years, and a famed player as well. What type of relationship do you guys still share today?
Oh, we see each other periodically. Joe is retired now, and he's in Denver for part of the year. And but we get together periodically, and we also meet over at the MSU soccer games once in a while.
Great stuff. Now, Nick has been coaching since 1973 and at East Lansing. Now, you know, your first back-to-back state championship run, though, here. I mean, how did this come about? Did you know this team was going to be that special?
I knew they were a good team. Did I know they're a special team? Not until about midseason, somewhere over there.
When did it click? Was there a moment?
There was a moment, no.
Tell me about that.
It was after a game or during a game, and we spoke to it last night, where I haven't been more prouder of a team than I was at that moment. Particularly tough game. The things weren't going right. But they, instead of getting wrapped up in the emotion of the game, they stayed focused on what they had to do They didn't resort to anything else but what they were supposed to do, and that is take the other team on, outplay them, out-hustle them, and outthink them.
And what game was that?
It was a local rival.
Gotcha. Okay, we won't name any names, you know, but yeah, gotcha. So you guys ended up pulling out that game, and that was the moment you knew, oh, man.
That's when I knew we had something special there. If they can do what they did that day, they can do anything they had to do on a soccer field to be state champions.
Gotta love that. Give yourselves a hand, fellas. All right. Now, I want to talk about your run as coach at East Lansing, Nick. I mean, it's pretty impressive. You, a total, have 6 state titles. When you talk about soccer in this area and your program at East Lansing, what do you think differentiates it and what makes it stand out compared to other programs around here?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the support of the community, the young men like we have over here who love to play the game not only during the season but off the season. Their parents are supportive. It's just not... a coaching thing. It's an atmosphere that you have where the kids enjoy the game and just want to go out there each day and give it their best. They're prepared to listen, they're prepared to work, and sometimes we get very lucky.
Now, in preparation each and every year, I mean, again, you've been at East Lansing for quite some time. I mean, has your method in preparing your team on the brink of a season changed year to year to year? Are you doing something different to all of a sudden click with these guys to make these deep state championship runs?
I don't know if we're doing anything basically different, but you have to go with the times and what is current. What I usually like to do is I have a very supportive coaching staff. We've been together for over 16 years, and you surround yourself with a good coaching staff, good people, and these players come in willing to learn, willing to make the sacrifices you have to make. It's not just to go out and do it. There's a lot of work that goes into it. They have to be willing to sweat. They have to be willing to listen. They have to be willing to change and sacrifice. And if they're willing to do that, they respect each other. And they got talent.
Apparently they do, right?
Apparently they do. It doesn't happen overnight. They've worked hard to get that talent. And we just got to muster it all together and put a plan out there that we're all on the same page. And when you do that, sometimes good things happen.
Now, looking at this year, I tell you what, you speak about sweating here. I mean, I was sweating just following you guys in this state tournament because I tell you what, man, so many overtime games this year that this team had to battle through throughout this year's state tournament. When you go to overtime in a game of soccer, because all it takes is one goal, one moment to capitalize a season. What did you tell your team in those moments to keep them calm? And again, did you sense any panic from these guys in those moments?
I never saw too much panic from these guys at all. There's probably more on my part, I think. But they've gone, they're comeback kids. They've came back several times in the state tournament. I think they had a comparison the other night of all 5 state champions and their run through the state tournament. And they were, they were in there. They had a lot of overtimes. They were very exciting.
Right.
But they didn't have the most overtime.
Right.
But
so who was the most overtimes go to?
I believe that went to the 87 team.
The 87 team, how many did they have?
3 or 4.
Had to be 4, because I know these guys had 3.
Had to be 4 then, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It's getting a little fuzzy up here now.
It happens, right. But, man, unbelievable stuff here. And you know what? When looking at you, Nick, I mean, you have some pretty cool honors that you've collected throughout your entire career. I mean, you've had Archer Stadium named after you over at the East Lansing Soccer Complex. It's really cool. And you actually didn't even find out about that until walking through Meyer. Am I right?
That's true.
Didn't even know he's being honored and had a stadium named after him until he's walking through shopping at Meyer.
It was kept under wraps. And then talking to a neighbor, and he said, well, they had the vote the other night. Did you know about that? And I said, know about what? No.
Probably in the fruit out, right?
Yeah,
gotta love it. Now, also, in addition to that, I mean, hey, you were inducted into the Michigan High School Coaches Association Hall of Fame. Nick, looking at all that you've accomplished throughout your career, your coaching career and playing career, do you ever take a step back and just sort of reminisce and say, wow, at all?
Sure. I guess you'd have to say. I didn't expect to, all these things to happen and fall in line. You just kind of do what you like doing. You enjoy the... camaraderie that you have with the teams and the fellow coaches. And you just keep plugging away, and sometimes things, you get lucky.
Give it up for that, guys. Give it up for that. Now, for you, Nick, I love asking this question because I tell you what, at the high school level, for me personally, I think it's the one of the purest forms of sport because you got a lot of kids out there that may not have the big scholarships as their teammate or personnel on the team, but they're playing the game because they truly love it. They're not getting paid. They're getting no dollar bills out of this thing, but they're playing it because they truly love it. For the coaches who coach these young men in the high school level, what do you specifically love about coaching the most?
The enjoyment of seeing the aha moments sometimes. You know, you work hard to try to accomplish something or present something, and it's falling apart at the beginning, but you slowly see the buildup. It could be either with a team or an individual, when all of a sudden they got it.
It just clicks, huh?
They know what it is. Yeah, they got it.
Now, Nick, I don't know if you know this. You may know it. I don't know. It's going to be a moment of revelation for both of us. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if the crowd knows this. But I got word earlier this week, in addition to the accolades that you have had accomplished, Lansing State Journal, Scott Yoshanis contacted me, and you have been named the Lansing State Journal Dream Team Coach of the Year. Give it up for that, guys.
Pretty lucky.
The Lansing State Journal Dream Team Coach of the Year. Did you know that, Nick?
I got wind of it today
at
Myers.
Okay, at Myers. No,
I had an interview with Scott today. We're talking about the wand, and it got out of the bag, I guess. So
gotcha.
I was really, really touched and honored. I was having lunch with my wife.
Right.
I took the call. I shouldn't have took the call. I should have just had the lunch.
Right.
But I found out about that then.
I mean, how does that make you feel, man? What's that feel like?
Well, it's nice, you know, but I think, you know, nothing would happen unless you have a lot of people on board. I mean, you know, the family, my fellow coaches, the team. I just have to be on the receiving end. But if you don't have good people around you, good things don't happen sometimes.
One more time for your coach, guys. Impressive stuff.
Well, I agree.
Okay. There's also one young man in the audience who turned a lot of heads this season and has been doing that for quite some time. He was actually named as Mr. Soccer. He's a senior. He will be taking his soccer talents right here at the Michigan State University men's soccer program, playing under the great Damon Rensing. DeJuan Jones, how you doing, my man?
Great.
Man, you, Mr. Soccer, I mean, quite an honor. What clicked for you this season, and when did you know that you were a pretty good soccer player?
I mean, we were just working really good together this year as a team, and we were finding the back of the net often, and we had to do so. I mean, we got scored on a lot, but offensively, we took care of it. And defensively, we had a lot of good stops.
Now, DeJuan, we talk about Mr. Soccer. You know what that means, right? It means, ideally, you are perceived as the best soccer player, boy soccer player in the state of Michigan. Is that a pinch-me moment for you?
It's definitely an honor, but I definitely couldn't have done it without my teammates and my coaches. They really helped me along, and they believed in me, which really helped me as a player.
Show him some love, guys. Gotta love that, right? DeJuan Jones, that is fantastic stuff. Now, I gotta ask this, Nick, because, again, you've been with this program for a long time and done some incredible things. 5 state championships, first time that the school has had back-to-back now. And I know it's pretty tempting, you know, to come back and try to, you know, defend that title, possibly go for a three-peat. Have you thought about coming back next year? Will you come back?
Well, you always got to think about coming back. I mean, geez, who wouldn't want to come back, right?
Right.
Or who would want to go out on top, right?
Exactly.
Hey, so my wife Lynn and I, we sit down, we talk it over. I mean, I've done this so often, so long, you know, it's almost natural to come back every year.
So is that a yes?
Well, right. Yeah, looks like it.
It looks like. Give it up for that. He's probably going to come back right now. All right. There you go. I kind of coached you into
that. Oh, you squeezed me hard.
I had to.
All right. Well, again, that's just a little taste of tonight's full meal. Okay, check it out tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR TV. That was head coach Nick Archer of the East Lansing boys soccer team. They are back to back state champions in Division II boys soccer. How about that, folks? Because the entire episode tonight at 10 p.m., folks, you do not want to miss that. Well, let's hit our break. When we come back, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you. What took place on this day in sports history? Don't miss it. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. About 9 minutes left in the show. We still got some time to take some calls if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Well, it is Thursday, folks, and each and every Thursday we dub it as Throwback Thursday, where we take a look at what happened on this day in current sports history. So, you know what? Let's drop into our current sports time machine and rewind the clock. Here we go. Throwback Thursday.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman, back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots, yes. Good. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks, it's Throwback Thursday. Let's take a look at what happened on this Thursday, November 13th, in sports history. All right, let's start this thing off. In 1900, the Baltimore Orioles entered Major League Baseball's American League. How about that? 1934, Ralph Scotty Bowman of the St. Louis Eagles scored the first penalty shot goal in NHL history. How about that, man? That's setting a trend there. All right, 1964, St. Louis's Bob Pettit became the first NBA player to score 20,000 points in a career. 1995, Greg Maddux of the Atlanta Braves became the first pitcher to win four consecutive Cy Young Awards. Man, is Greg Maddux good or what? How about that? And in 2000, I didn't even know this one. This is kind of comical right here. The Michigan State Spartans handed the Harlem Globetrotters, the team. You've seen the commercials and probably even been to a few games of the Harlem Globetrotters. They are known for their antics on the court, dunking and alley-oops and going between the legs and so on and so forth. An entertaining team. But the Spartans handed the Globetrotters their first defeat in 1,271 games in a 72-68 exhibition game victory. Andrew now joins me, our fantastic intern here. Andrew, isn't that kind of comical? I didn't even know that the Spartans played the Globe. Was this Izzo's team we're talking about?
This was Izzo's. And you know what? The weird thing about it is I've always remembered when Michigan State, because I grew up a Michigan State fan, and I always remembered when they beat the Harlem Globetrotters. I forgot that it was 2000, but I remember it being a big deal in my 7-year-old, 8-year-old brain, that was a huge deal that Michigan State had beat the Harlem Globetrotters. But now yeah. I realize how, this is what I want to know, right, and what I've been thinking about. How would you have handled that post-game press conference, and what questions would you ask the Globetrotters?
Man, that is a very good question, because again, that broke what a 1,271 game win streak. I mean, that's right. Unbelievable. So I would probably attack it just. First off, you know, Fred Heumann used to teach me this at Channel 6, you know, the easiest question that you can get the most response out of is just by asking, how does it feel? I would probably just start off by asking, how does it feel to lose after winning that many games consecutively? My goodness, that's unbelievable, man. But how about that? On this day in 2000, Tom Izzo, he takes everything serious, I tell you, even if it's an exhibition game. Did you see? I don't know if you guys saw this, but was it St. Cloud State? Izzo, actually, him and the coach, St. Cloud head coach, they set up a thing where Izzo would come in and just talk about how they performed and what can St. Cloud improve on as the season goes on. Of course, St. Cloud, I believe that's the same team that Tom Izzo's nephew plays on, am mm-hmm. I right? So Izzo goes in there and totally just rips a new one in the rear end of this team and just says, you know, what they did wrong. There's a lack of leadership on the team. I love Tom Izzo, man. I tell you what, one of the most uber competitive coaches you'll ever see in your life. I just saw from Athlon Sports for the second year in a row now, they've actually voted for Tom Izzo being the top college basketball head coach for 2 years straight now. And, of course, Coach K is second. I know Rick Pitino was in that list as well. And Calipari. I believe Calipari was third. So that's just time. That's classic Tom Izzo for you. But a very comical moment in sports history right there for you. All right. Well, Andrew, you've been behind the glass sort of listening to our entire discussion on this whole student-athlete debate. Is the student part of the student athlete sort of going out the window and diminishing as years go by? Really briefly, before we close out the show, what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, the more money that comes in, the less that the student is involved, I think. And it's actually really unfortunate because I was ready to come in here and say, of course it's changing. Of course it's changing. Who cares? I mean, it's, you know, it's sports. And sports at this point is all about money.
Right.
And how to squeeze as much money as you can out of a team, out of an individual, out of your fame. And I thought Mike's call was awesome because it made me realize, oh, yeah, these are people that we're talking about. And that's one thing that gets lost in all of this is, yes, it's important for these guys to become better athletes, and that's ultimately that's the goal. That's why they're here.
Exactly.
And, you know, we can talk about the student-athlete being an equal 50-50 split, which
it's
not true at all.
Right.
It's not true at all. And and I don't think it could be that way. However, that education still needs to be there. And that was one thing that Mike's call really reminded me of, is for a lot of these guys, and that's one thing that just needs to be focused on and not be lost by the people that are making money, is yes, it's fine for these kids to focus on their athletics and maybe spend more time focusing on the athletics than your average student, but at the same time, they still have to be that student.
Right.
And the NCAA is not doing its job when it's patrolling things like how many signatures or how much money Todd Gurley got for a signature, rather than what are our kids, what are our athletes doing in the classroom.
Right.
That's an issue that the NCAA has to look at. And I think that's one thing that this whole thing opens up. And one thing that's not being focused on enough is, while it is an oversight and a major, major problem from the administrators, that's what these schools are expected to do.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what the NCAA is here for, is to patrol things like that.
Exactly.
Where the school is being forgotten in favor of the athletics. And that's really what's screwed up in this whole thing.
I think that was very well said, Andrew. Folks, if you agree or disagree, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot me a comment there. I'll read it on tomorrow's show. Or tweet us at my Twitter page of at AlMartinWKR or at @WKR_sports, and I'll read those tweets and comments on tomorrow's show. During tomorrow's show, we'll talk about the Tigers signing V. Martin and also some other moves that were have been shaken up a little bit concerning the Detroit Tigers. We'll dive into that during tomorrow's show. We'll also talk about the Pistons as, they're a bit rocky right now. They're on a 3-game losing streak. And how about the recruiting that Tom Izzo has done with the MSU men's team? Two big recruits shooting who can shoot the blood out the ball, folks. We'll dive into that as well during tomorrow's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day. Don't forget Current Sports TV tonight. Head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team, back-to-back Division II state champs, Nick Archer and his squad will be on the show. And we'll have all of that and so much more tonight. Okay, that's tomorrow. That's tonight, at 10 p.m. Have a fantastic day. And as always, be easy, people.